Welcome to Sports Rivals with Monty and Ernie. Lively, entertaining banter on sports topics you want to hear.
All right, everyone, wherever you are and however you may be listening, welcome to the It Is March Madness edition of the Sports Rivals. That's Ernie, fresh off his 56th birthday last night.
Woo!
Happy birthday, Ernie!
Woo!
He's still hungover, so we're going to take advantage of that.
I am.
And I am Monty, and together we are the Sports Rivals. There is so much going on this week. Normally, we break down the entire bracket game by game to get to the Final Four. We're going to still do our Final Four picks, but there is so much else going on in the world of sports that we are not going to go through the entire bracket, but we'll tell you who we think will be cutting down the nets. But Ernie, we have to start with University of Hawaii sports. The hopeful outcome of the Big West tourney in Las Vegas did not transpire. Instead, it turned into Heartbreak City on Friday of last week, as first the Wahine, as the number one seed, lose Deja Phillips to start the third quarter. Lili Wahine Kapu goes 1 for 14 from the field, missing two free throws with 9 seconds left that would have given them the lead. And they succumb to UC Davis by a score of 51 to 48, knocking them out. Devastating loss for the Wahine.
Yeah, I mean, they were on such a, I guess, a high note that, yeah, anything short of them winning the, you know, the tournament is a disappointment, and so it is. You know, I mean, unfortunately, in the conference that they're in, it's very unlikely that you get in at large, which, you know, showed in the selection committee's notes, as they were not invited to the big dance as an at large. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's very unfortunate for this rendition of the Rainbow Wahine.
Yeah.
They had such a successful, you know, regular season.
They had an amazing season. They end with a 20-10 record. Not end, because they are in the WBIT, the women's version of the NIT tournament. But just so devastating. It was like a perfect storm of wrong things happening all at the same time. And that's the, you know, some people say it's the beauty of March Madness, where mm-hmm. anything can happen on any given day. And if you pick the wrong day to have a bad game, you're out.
Yeah.
And they had the double bye. And unfortunately for them, it didn't happen. UC Davis knocked them out. And even if they would have found a way to come back and won, it would have been very difficult to beat an Irvine team that went on to beat UC Davis pretty handily without Deja Phillips, the Big West six woman of the year, an all Big West conference type player. But you would have liked to see them have a chance. And now it's going to be very interesting to see what frame of mind they're in as they go to Cal Berkeley on Thursday to play the second seeded Cal Berkeley Bears of their bracket in the WBIT. I think Laura Beeman will have them ready. She point blank told them at the end of the game, if any of you are not ready to play in the WBIT, you can head back to Honolulu. No one came home, so I assume they're going to give it their best bet.
Mm-hmm.
But still, without Deja Phillips, with that kind of an emotional disappointment,
yeah,
it's going to be a challenge to get up for this Cal Berkeley team that they're going to be double-digit underdogs against anyway.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, just the letdown of not being invited to the big dance, that alone. I mean, we see it on the men's side with, you know, all those teams opting not to play in the NIT. You know, it's just like go big or go home, and a lot of people are choosing to go home. You know, so it does take a lot of fortitude to keep your spirits high and to head into a tournament with your head up high, ready to compete, you know, albeit without your, you know, basically your star player being sidelined on the bench.
I would love to see Lili Wahine Kapu come back on Thursday, win or lose, and just play with confidence and have a good game.
I would bet she does. I mean, it comes with the law of averages. I think, and any good player worth mentioning would always tell you, you know, shooters just shoot. You forget the last game, and the law of averages will dictate itself, and it'll come back to fruition where, you know, she has, you know, a successful comeback game, in my opinion.
Well, let's hope so. Again, that's Thursday night. The Wahine travel to Cal Berkeley to face the California Golden Bears. We are hopeful that they can pull out a win and find a way to keep going in the WBIT. But irregardless, a tremendous season again for Laura Beeman and the Wahine. Another regular season title, 17-3 in conference play. It just did not work out in the Big West tournament. Now, on the men's side, it's a tale of good and bad. I mean, they finally won a game for the first time in a while. They found a way to beat. They got lucky, in my opinion, because CSUN knocked off Santa Barbara in the play-in game, meaning that we didn't have to play Santa Barbara, and we match up well with CSUN. They found a way to get it done in that game, 75-68, setting up a clash with UC Davis, and it was a tale of runs. They start off flat, get blown out early, make a tremendous comeback in going into the half, only 31-29. Come out in the second half, they get blown out again. The lead stretches into the double digits to come all the way back and have a shot down one with less than 5 seconds to go. Javon McClanahan gets a good look. Yep. It just didn't fall.
Yep.
And UC Davis hangs on to knock off the men.
Yeah, I mean, those runs were killer. I mean, I think our guard play in the beginning was not up to par. You know, Davis put on a full court press in the beginning, and it was just a game of turnovers. They had a lot of turnovers where they were just being outshot from the field. When you don't take a shot and the other team takes, like, double your shots, you're going to be down by that many points. I mean, that's the way it was. I mean, hats off, credit to the, you know, to the Warriors that they came back and they fought hard to, you know, get it close at the halftime. But the same thing happened. I really thought that the guard play with McClanahan out there, at least he in my opinion, at least he did something. Coleman, in my part, was disappointing in that entire game. I mean, they couldn't bring up the trap, really threw off the rhythm of the Warriors on both runs, on both halves. And he didn't, I mean, he'll be the first to tell you he didn't have a good game. I thought the infusion of getting Juan out there was tremendous. He hit some big threes, and I thought that momentum really carried. And I was surprised that Gannat didn't stay with him for a longer period of time. I thought, you know, his legs looked pretty good. But yeah, very disappointing. I was ready to tell you, I was ready at 22-6. I was ready to turn the channel, you know. But I had nothing else to do. I'm just gonna sit out, and we came back and made it, and at least a very respectable game. Hats off for the men. You know, we had these guys down for the count about a month ago. Well, at least I did.
Yeah,
I had them down for the count, and for them to get this far. If you told me this a month ago, I would have took it head, shoulders,
yeah,
and everything.
So, you know what is weird is the men and the women both end with 20 wins, and it just seems like the women had the more successful season. So by all standards, I think in Hawaii, they finish at 20-14. I would think you would have to say it's a fairly successful season. I think the men always have aspirations to try to win the Big West tournament and to get into the Big Dance, but they finished with 9 wins in their last 12 games to put themselves into a position. They come up short against UC Davis. Now the interesting part happens. 6 seniors leaving. That frees up a ton of room for recruiting. And that's one of the reasons that Hawaii decided not to take an invitation to the CBI, which is a pay-for-play. You actually have to pay $27,500 to enter this tournament, which is in Florida. UH had a donor willing to front the money, but Ron Gannat said, no, we want to get after it. We want to start recruiting. We want to start talking to people that may be in the transfer portal. So what this team looks like next year is going to be really, really interesting. We know that BD will be back and Rapp will be back, and hopefully Sec will be able to recover in time for the season. But beyond that, you know, you had some guys on the bench getting ready. Who can they get in to come in? Because irregardless, there is a lot of experience on this team that just played their last game at the University of Hawaii. So congratulations. And for those of you that were here for a while, the McClanahans, the Noel Coleman, the Bernardo da Silva, et cetera, that were here for their entire college careers. Thank you for your contributions to Hawaii and everything that you do. And for Justin McCoy, thank you for stopping by for one year. You definitely made a difference there. And for Bobby Munoz, thanks for your resiliency. The only guy I know that has played 8 years of college basketball with catastrophic injury after catastrophic injury, fighting through it to be able to at least play a senior season. So congratulations. Again, the men finish at 20-14. Nothing to snooze at. I think we had higher aspirations considering the fast start. Then we had no aspirations considering they went in the toilet. And they found a way to be resilient and rebound at the end of the season. So congratulations to both the men and the women programs. Women are playing. The men will see what happens, and it'll be really interesting to follow what happens during the off season. So let's transition to men's volleyball. So last week when we were recording, we were talking about the Irvine game. That Irvine game was played. It was a barn burner. It went to 5 sets and up 14-10 in the 5th set with only 1 point remaining. Spyros Hakas lands awkwardly and what appears to be a torn ACL, although they're not going to announce that, but he is going to have surgery. That much they announced. He's out for the season, and that is a devastating loss.
Devastating.
Not only from a talent perspective, when they needed a spike, when they needed a kill, they would go to him, but he's a tremendous defensive player in the back, and he is by far their best leader. So missing him is going to be a huge void.
Yeah. I mean, it's talk about letting the air out of the balloon. That was a big needle that popped the balloon. I mean, I don't know what their goals are. I mean, he was one player, but he was definitely one important player.
Yeah, you're talking about a definite first team All-American. So the way things happen, the injury happens, and all of a sudden they get buoyed up to be the number one team in the nation, only to have to fly to Long Beach State, where they've lost 9 in a row at the beach in the pyramid without Hakas. And you could see Friday night how that happened. I mean, Long Beach State took it to them 25-20, 23-20, I believe. It was a sweep. Long Beach State wins it in 3 straight. But what was encouraging is on Saturday, the men bounced back a little bit. They lost the first set, won the second set, lost the third set, won the fourth set, took them to 15-13 in the 5th set before falling to Long Beach State. So you can kind of see the progression. So if I'm Charlie Wade, I'm a lot more optimistic now that they're going to be able to find a way to still get to the national championships because it's expanded now. But they're going to be hard-pressed to be able to beat Irvine and Long Beach and UCLA and the likes without Spyros Hakas. But at least they showed a lot of grit and a lot of spunk and some resiliency. And now it's going to take some time. Is it going to be Keone Tim? Is it going to be Sakanoko? Somebody's going to have to step up. It's, you know, they were hoping Galloway was going to step up, and instead he played the first set, benched the second, third, and fourth sets, came back for a little while in the 5th set. It's unfortunate that Galloway, for whatever reason, has regressed this year when they really, really needed him. You're talking about an All-American caliber player that has really disappeared now and is almost an afterthought on this team, and they could not afford that to happen.
Yeah, we saw it like in the beginning parts of the season when he was benched, you know. Yeah, I mean, a guy with that type of vertical, I mean, not a very big guy, but the guy's got some hops and everything. Yeah. But the men are going to have to find their identity again. I mean, it's all mixed up. I would expect for them to regress a little bit, and hopefully by the time the playoffs start, they can find an identity and build upon that. I still think they're a very good team. Definitely, obviously, without the firepower of Chakas, makes it a much difficult climb. But, you know, stranger things have happened. You know, when one door closes, another door opens, or window opens, or whatever the saying says. So this is an opportunity for the people who, you know, were on the back burner to step it up. Just like how Chakas did, you know, when he was like a junior or a sophomore, coming into the program. So, you know, still believe in them. They got enough talent on that team to find another leader, but it's got to happen fast.
Yeah, absolutely. It has to happen. And I'm encouraged. They come home this weekend. They got CSUN. Hopefully they can get two wins. They're going to struggle when they have to go up to Irvine. But like we talked about earlier, the Big West tournament is in Honolulu. And here at the Stan Scherf, at the Simplify Arena, anything can happen when you have 10,000 people screaming and cheering you on. So they still absolutely have a chance. I was not surprised by Friday, and I was very encouraged by Saturday. We'll see if they can put it together and string some wins together and get back to the national championships. So again, that is a summary of UH sports, a mixed bag. I mean, I think disappointment from the fact that Hakas got hurt. They lost two at Long Beach. Their number one is going to be short-lived. On the basketball side, tough losses for them. But overall, a very positive end of the season for the basketball teams and a step in the right direction, hopefully Saturday night for the men's volleyball team. So Ernie, let's transition now to March Madness. Again, that's Ernie. I'm Monty. We are the Sports Rivals, part of the Hawaii Sports Radio Network. Let's get into the tournament challenge. So I think, first of all, for me, it really seems the number one seeds are gonna go to the final four. I have three out of four. I believe you have three out of four as well. So the thing that surprised me right off the bat was the number one overall seed went to Connecticut. Yet to me, they have the hardest bracket. And the lowest ranked number four is your North Carolina Tar Heels. And to me, by far, they have the easiest bracket. So I'm not exactly sure what's going on with that.
Yeah, regionals, that's why.
I mean, it's kind of crazy. So we're not going to go through the entire bracket, but what we are going to do is tell you who our Final Four is and then maybe some upsets. So in the East, believe it or not, in my bracket, I have not a single upset the entire way. The favorites win every game leading up to University of Connecticut winning the East region by beating second-seeded Iowa State. I have UConn going to the Final Four. And I was actually surprised. I surprised myself by picking... Actually, there is one. There's one upset. I'm sorry. I had Drake beating Washington State, if you consider that to be an upset. But other than Drake over Washington State, I have status quo in the East region. How about you?
Yeah, it's close to it. I was thinking Duquesne, BYU, but I just couldn't go there. And the ever-popular 5 versus 12, UAB versus San Diego State. San Diego State was a Final Four participant last year. I mean, they've got good coaching. That didn't look like a smart move, even though it was a 5-12. So I'm the same with you. I mean, it was pretty much status quo. I don't think it was status quo through the entire progression to the Final Four, but at least in the first round, I didn't have any major upsets on that side.
Yeah, so what's weird about the East as well, you have UConn, FAU, and San Diego State, all Final Four participants from last year. Let me get this turned off. Technical difficulties there. Okay, so Ernie, you have UConn, though. Who is UConn beating to get into the Final Four? I have them beating Iowa State, the 2 seed.
I have them beating Iowa State, the 2 seed.
Okay, all right.
So Iowa State has been playing terrific ball. I mean, if you watch that, I mean, I know it's one game, but if you saw that championship game like versus Houston, boy, they were hitting on all cylinders, man.
Yeah, that's a good team. I mean, if Iowa State were in any other region, I would have had them in the Final Four.
Could be.
I believe they're playing that well.
They are.
To me, they're the best 2 seed. At least they're playing the best right now as a 2 seed. But they're playing the best team in the country, in my opinion, which makes that hard. So let's flip over to the South, where this is a region that has the potential for a lot of upsets. And I'm going to turn it over to Ernie because he's got some crazy upsets in the South region.
Oh, yeah. I have James Madison over Wisconsin. I have Vermont over Duke. I think Duke's been playing 500 ball in their last 10 games. They got knocked out in the semis, of the ACC tournament. Vermont's been playing very well over there. Even if going into the second rounds, I mean, I have Kentucky falling out in the Sweet 16. They don't even make the quarterfinals. But in the end, the cream rises. I have Marquette versus Houston, with Houston going to the Final Four.
Yeah, so for Ernie, he has James Madison in the 12-5 knocking off Wisconsin, Vermont a 13 knocking off 4th-seeded Duke, an 11-seeded NC State knocking off 6-seeded Texas Tech, all in that first set of games. For me, I agree. I think James Madison knocks off Wisconsin. I do think Duke will handle Vermont. And then I think James Madison knocks off Duke and gets all the way to the Sweet 16. This James Madison team is 31-3. They are the real deal.
And they are disruptive. I saw a clip on them. They play chaotic ball,
which I don't think is good for Duke. I mean,
exactly.
I think Duke doesn't go very deep. So if they can push Duke gets into foul trouble, that could spell problems. On the bottom side, though, I kind of went status quo. I like Texas Tech. I love Kentucky, Florida, and Marquette. And then I have Kentucky, Marquette, and Kentucky going to the Elite Eight, where they will lose to the Houston Cougars.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened against Iowa State in that 69-41 blowout for Houston. I know their big man was hurt, and I think he has to be healthy by next week. I think they can afford to rest him this week and still get through the first game. But by next week, they're going to need Juwan Roberts there for the Houston Cougars. But I believe Houston will come out. They play their games in Texas. The regions are in Dallas. So again, they're not going to have to travel very far. I like Houston to be my second number one seed into the Final Four. So let's drop down now to the Midwest region. And in that one, that's going to be the only region, Ernie, that I don't have a number one seed making it to the Final Four.
You and me.
Yeah. So in this one, though, again, I am not calling too many upsets. Ernie is.
I am.
Ernie has, I believe, McNeese State knocking off Gonzaga.
Yep. I have Samford over Kansas.
So who do you have winning that McNeese-Samford one in the second round?
McNeese State beating Samford, only to fall victim to Purdue.
So for me, I am... Well, maybe it's a little homerism because a lot of people are taking McNeese State, but I think that's going to be all the motivation Gonzaga needs, that the whole world's picking against them. I like Gonzaga to win that one. I like Kansas to find a way to knock off Samford. The key to Kansas is going to be the health of Hutchinson and McCullers. They sat out the Big 12 tourney. If they are not healthy, certainly Samford could knock them off. If they are not healthy, certainly Gonzaga could knock them off. I have Gonzaga advancing to the Sweet 16, only to lose to Purdue. That bottom half, I think, is loaded. One upset there, I have Oregon over South Carolina.
So do I.
But other than that, I think it's Tennessee, Texas, Creighton, Oregon, and then it's going to be Tennessee, Creighton. And I believe Creighton knocks off Tennessee and gets to play Purdue, and they match up well with Purdue. They have a big guy that can give Zach Edey some trouble, and they shoot free throws almost 90% from their best free throw shooters. I think they have what it takes to knock off Purdue. My favorite Purdue, 3 years in a row, Ernie, they've been knocked out by a 13 seed or worse. I don't know if Purdue's going to get to this point, but they just look to be different this year, so we'll wait and see.
They have continuity. They have the players on their team who have, you know, tasted the failure in past tournaments. I just don't think it's their time. I mean, they lost in their tournament. I mean, they are beatable, and they're like a Tennessee, ranked very high, but have a tradition of getting out. Tennessee, I would even watch. I'm picking Tennessee over St. Peter's. St. Peter's had that magical run last year. They lost their coach to Seton Hall. But, you know, I expect that game to be close, you know, and everything. But I'm like you. I got Oregon, who's been on a roll. They won the Pac-12 tournament. The fight, double-digit seed, you know, winning that tournament. South Carolina, I don't know if, you know, how good ball they've been playing lately, but in that, I'm just like you. Purdue versus Creighton, I'm taking Creighton. I'm thinking a consistent team that knows how to play ball towards the end versus a team who have all the demons from past tournaments to rise up again and bite them in the ass.
Yeah, so one of the things, though, I think what's weird about this tournament, that other than Connecticut, all the other teams are coming into the tournament off a loss.
Yeah.
I mean, number one seed North Carolina lost. Number one seed Purdue lost. Number one seed Houston lost. Two seed Arizona lost. Tennessee lost. Marquette lost. Iowa State's the only two seed to win. So the only teams going in hot are in the East region with Iowa State and the University of Connecticut. So Ernie is thrilled that in the West region, his North Carolina Tar Heels are sitting pretty in this region. But tell us about any kind of upsets that you see here.
I mean, the biggest one I would have was New Mexico over Clemson on an 11 over the 6. The rest is pretty much, yeah. Other than that, I don't have too many upsets, at least in the first round. North Carolina has very much an easy path. I wasn't going to pick North Carolina. I'm a North Carolina fan, but I wasn't going to pick them going to the Final Four. When I saw this bracket come out, who's going to beat them? I just said to myself, who's going to beat them? Arizona's been struggling. I don't think they're going to be doing very well. Baylor hasn't been playing very good. Clemson is, to me, overrated, underseed. That, to me, that's, I mean, I really like New Mexico over Clemson in that game. And Alabama, I don't think they have the firepower as of last season. North Carolina would, I mean, yeah, they can be beaten. I mean, RJ Davis will have to have a really bad day versus another team having an on day. But that, you know, I just don't see them having any problem. I have North Carolina taking that division easy.
Yeah, I have New Mexico knocking off Clemson. I have Nevada knocking off Dayton. That would be my two biggest upsets. But again, it's a tale of the same thing. Arizona has been knocked out early in a number of consecutive seasons, so that kind of scares me. Alabama can give North Carolina trouble. Alabama has scored over 100 points like 10 times this year. They're by far the highest scoring team in the nation, and they shoot the three. If they're hot, they can beat anyone in the country, but they're going to have to be hot. I really think for North Carolina, RJ Davis has been consistent all year. Harrison Ingram has been more than they expected, I think, rebounding. He's a double-double machine. Baycott has to be the Baycott of the last few years. But I don't see them losing here. I mean, I really don't. Could Alabama beat them? Yeah. I think North Carolina sails to the Final Four. So that sets up a UConn-North Carolina semifinal, a Houston-Creighton semifinal. For me, UConn knocks off North Carolina, and Houston knocks off Creighton, and it's one against one, and UConn cuts down the nets again. For me, I have it as a 73-62 type of a game. I think they're going to win by double digits. I think UConn is that much better than the rest of the country right now.
Yeah, and if you heard my prediction, I mean, I said it about, I think, a week or two ago, that I expect a number one, and it doesn't normally happen, but I said a number one will play a number one, and that number one, if they were in separate brackets, would be UConn versus Houston. That's who I have coming out. Unfortunately, North Carolina makes it to another Final Four and loses. Creighton has that magical run. Well, not really magical. They're a 3-seed, but Houston is just that good. I have this, even though Houston has a tremendous defense, I expected this to be a little bit higher scoring affair, in my opinion. I like UConn, though, to cut down the nets. I like it 77-70.
Okay, so we both have UConn. We both have them winning by 7-11 points. I just think Danny Hurley's got it going on right now.
He's
up there at UConn.
They lost two good players, in my opinion, last year, and they're still hitting on all cylinders.
Yeah, they lost three good players. The Jackson, that was that all-world, like a Draymond Green type, that was defense, rebounds, assists, just didn't score. he's with the Milwaukee Bucks, getting some playing time with them. But yeah, they lost three guys and they just put three new guys in there, and they're playing really, really well. And they're a team that's not dependent on any one person. They can win with offense. They can win with shooting. They can win with a big guy in the middle. They can win with defense.
Yep.
They can beat you in so many different ways. I expect UConn to cut down the nets again for the, what is that going to be, their sixth title in the last 20 plus years. That's starting to get to some ultra blue blood status for the UConn Huskies. So that's what we think. Tell us what you think. Go to our Twitter X account at Sports Rivals Pod, Sports Rivals Podcast on IG and Facebook, Sports Rivals Pod on Twitter. On there, look for Sports Rivals Podcast. You'll have a link to our ESPN Tournament Bracket Challenge. We encourage you to click on that link and put in your picks and see. There's no money involved. It's just a whole lot of pride. And Ernie says he's going for a back-to-back championship here. He wants to take down everyone in Hawaii and across the globe. So again, that's Sports Rivals Podcast on Twitter or X. And click on the Tournament Bracket Challenge that we have on there in our profile. And go ahead and submit your picks. But let's transition one more time. This time to the NFL. We're not even going to talk NBA, and there's like 14 games left. We're going to talk the NFL because so much has happened in the last week. The most sad, I'm going to say for last in my closing thought, but let's start off with the quarterback. Kirk Cousins gets 4 years and $180 million from the Atlanta Falcons. $45 million a year for the Falcons. Your thoughts on whether or not this puts the Falcons in the Super Bowl next year?
It does not put them in the Super Bowl. Not even close. Not even close. You got a new system over there with you know, their former coach now being the offensive coordinator of the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, it's geared towards a running game. In Atlanta, you know, them picking up Bijan Johnson last year. They got two good running backs. They got a tremendous, talented tight end, good receiver. But that team, that organization is, in my opinion, just dysfunctional. They made it to the Super Bowl once and had a total collapse against the New England Patriots. That 180 is going to handicap them for the next 4 years.
Yeah, see, I like it a little bit more than you do. I do think that this makes them the favorite in the AFC South. I know that's not saying much, but I do think that Kirk Cousins has a history of being an accurate quarterback. Now, this all hinges on the fact that he's healed from his Achilles, and I got to think the early returns must be good for the Falcons to put that kind of bank in his pocket. But I think you're going to see a massive leap this year in Drake London. I think Drake London is going to go from what he was this year to a 1,400-yard type pass catcher. I believe they're going to open up a little bit more. Raheem Morris brought Rams offensive coaches with him to run the offense. I think they do have Bijan Robinson, and I think he could end up being one of the best running backs in the NFL this year. But I think you're going to see the best of Pitts now that he finally has somebody that can throw the ball. Kirk Cousins always targets his tight ends as well. So I expect London and Pitts to take the next step. Now, whether that translates into a deep playoff run, I don't know. I think they're better than they are this year. Oh, yeah. They were quick to jettison Desmond Ridder, trading him to the Arizona Cardinals to back up Kyler Murray, getting Rondale Moore. Even that I really liked for the Falcons. Small, shifty, quick slot receiver. You got those two tall giants in Drake London and Pitts that can be in the slot on the outside. You got the little guy to maneuver on the inside. They signed Darryl Mooney as well, another wide receiver coming over from the Chicago Bears. I think that offense has a chance, if Kirk Cousins is healthy, to put up 28 to 30 points a game. I think they have but defensively, I'm not sure what happened. So let's move on to some of the other big news. We talked last week about Russell Wilson signing with the Steelers, and that triggered a series of events this week that we have to discuss.
Crazy.
First, Kenny Pickett gets traded to the Eagles. Your thoughts on that trade?
I was shocked. I didn't see that one coming. And then I'm getting the news afterwards on the reasons why it kind of made sense, you know, when you put the pieces together, stemming back from last season when he didn't suit up as the third string quarterback when he was basically cleared to play, came out to be, it made him out to become a malcontent. And Tomlin's style has always been, we want volunteers, we don't want hostages. So that was a quick decision to let go of Kenny Pickett. The bigger surprise was picking up Justin Fields on the rebound. And even the biggest, and let me back up, the bigger surprise was that Philadelphia didn't pick up Justin Fields when I thought you and me both had thoughts that that offense in Philadelphia fit Justin Fields' you know, qualities as a quarterback much more better. But they paid for Pickett as far as compensation more than Pittsburgh paid for Fields.
Yeah, I mean, that was surprising. First of all, Pittsburgh, as they always do, do things and win all the transactions. They got a third round pick and some pick swaps for Kenny Pickett, which is the highest round of a draft pick of any of the quarterbacks that's been traded recently. And I don't understand for the life of me why the Eagles want Kenny Pickett when they already have Jalen Hurts. Is there trouble in paradise when it comes to Jalen Hurts? But you're right. We thought that Justin Fields is a more appropriate backup for Jalen Hurts because they play similar games. So it'd be very easy. It's kind of like the situation with the Commanders now. Looks like they're going to take Jaden Daniels with the 2 pick. So they trade Sam Howell out to the Seahawks and they sign Marcus Mariota, who's very similar to a Jaden Daniels. So Kenny Pickett backing up Jalen Hurts to me doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Giving up a third round pick, getting a third round pick for the Steelers is a boon considering all it took was a 6th round pick to get Justin Fields. Now, what I did hear, and I give the Bears some credit for this, there were 4 teams that wanted Justin Fields. Justin Fields told them, I want the Steelers, which is why they took the 6th round pick. They didn't announce who the other 3 teams, maybe it was the Eagles and he didn't want to go there. Maybe he thinks, as he should, I got a better chance beating out Russell Wilson than I do Jalen Hurts. And maybe that went in. So the Bears did him a favor, did him a solid, sent him to where he wanted to go. But immediately out of Steeler camp, Russell Wilson's the starter, yeah, and Justin Fields is the backup. Do you believe that, first of all?
I believe that. I believe that that was the case all along, even though it was reported that Pickett had the job and that Russell Wilson would have to beat him out. Picking up Russell Wilson, he's the type of quarterback that he's not going to take any deal, albeit he's only getting $1.2 million from the Steelers. He's still getting close to $40 million from the Denver Broncos. He's still got that pride factor. He's not coming into a situation where he's going to be the backup. So I believe that that was in the talks, and I believe that played into the case on why Pickett wanted out of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the case, but the Steelers now have Russell Wilson and Justin Fields that they're going to pay a combined like $4 million for both of them,
yeah,
for this year. So Ernie's a little concerned. They traded Deontay Johnson. They got a little bit of a void there. They need a center, some other pieces. They got Patrick Queen, which is another solid addition. The only thing that I'm concerned about with Patrick Queen is that he was very disappointing until Rogue Smith got there, and then he was really good when he was playing alongside the best linebacker in football. Is he going to revert back now to the Patrick Queen who was a disappointment his first few years in Baltimore? I know you're hoping that that's not the case, but with paying the quarterback only $4 million's got to give them cap space to go and fill out the roster the way you want them to.
I kind of hope so. I think they're still going to have to do some restructuring out there. You know, maybe restructure Highsmith, who they signed to a big contract last year. Maybe Minka Fitzpatrick, you know, restructures his deal also. But they still, the reason why I'm a little bit concerned about picking up, why I'm a type of guy, I want to plug in the important holes first. I thought we plugged in the quarterback, And then once we plug in the other holes, then you go up for the backup. But I said to you off the air, I trust in Omar Khan. And I mean, he just does it in his own way. Steelers still have a concern on center. They have no starting center right now. They're missing a wide receiver. And Van Jefferson, no, he's not going to be one of the starters. If that happens, we're in deep doo-doo. They need a defensive back. We need a nickel corner also. Those four positions need to be addressed either within the draft or, you know, for the remainder of the free agency period. I heard Williams from San Diego Chargers is going to be coming into a visit for the Steelers on Thursday, but that's a deal where I give it maybe a 20% chance of happening. So it remains to be seen. I like what they've done. I just don't like the order. I'd feel more comfortable after that. This is genius, in my opinion, if they can fill in the rest of the holes. If the rest of the holes don't get filled, I'm going to question why we did it.
Well, but I think they're in better position to fill the holes. They flipped Kenny Pickett for a third-round draft pick, so now that's one other solid draft pick to fill one of these holes rather than sitting Pickett on the bench. And they only gave up a sixth, which was part of the pick swap for Justin Fields. So I trust the Steelers. I think they're going to be fine. They are always drafting wide receivers late and developing them into Pro Bowl players. I think with that first pick, maybe a Brian Smith from LSU might still be there with the Steelers pick. Maybe they grab the best center in the draft right there. They have a number of picks that they can go ahead and fill in. So I love what the Steelers did as usual. Ernie's teams just win the off seasons, and then my teams win the regular seasons. But with the Eagles, Saquon Barkley is now an Eagle. That remains to be seen how good of a situation that is. The Eagles are going to miss Jason Kelce immensely. Not only as a player, probably the best center in the last 10 years, a lock first ballot Hall of Famer, but just brilliantly smart. His leadership, his organizational ability. Do they even do the tush push anymore without him there? That is a gaping hole that the Eagles are going to have to address, because if the offensive line, which was a strength for the last few years, becomes a weakness, then Saquon Barkley is just going to be facing the same type of situation that he had with the Giants. So I think Saquon Barkley is going to be good. It's weird to see him go from rival to rival. But the Eagles, you know, they just... Sometimes I think the Eagles just make moves just to make moves. They just start grabbing people and doing things. So we're waiting to see what happens. And then Brian Burns traded from the Panthers to the Giants, gets his 5-year, $150 million contract. There's a lot of people that were trashing the Giants for making this trade. I actually like this for the Giants. You already have the Oregon kid, Thibodeau, on one side. Now you have Brian Burns on the other side. Dexter Lawrence was first team All-Pro in the middle. That is a formidable defensive line now that they have. Too bad they have nobody on offense.
Yeah.
So that's what they're going to have to do with that sixth pick. Whoever the Chargers don't take, the Giants should take, whether it be Neighbors or Odunze. They got to get themselves a wide receiver right there and start to build some of that offense, because if not, it's going to be Boringville there.
It is. I mean, and Daniel's got to live up to that contract that he recently signed. I mean, it's all going to be on him he's not sharing the limelight again with Saquon Barkley. It's all on him now. So he's going to have to make that move, step up, be the big boy, you know, on the offense and make them shine. If not, that doesn't happen. Tough sledding for the Giants.
Yep, I still believe the Giants are going to be one of the worst teams in the NFL.
Yeah, because look at the Jets. The Jets put the same thing, and they rolled the dice on with that super talented team. You took out Aaron Rodgers. Look where they landed.
And then the Jets too. They go and take Tyron Smith
from the Cowboys.
From the Cowboys, yeah, with a 1-year deal up to $20 million. They trade for Moses from the Ravens for the other tackle. If they both stay healthy, gold mine for the Jets.
Great, but
big big if that they're going to stay healthy, because Tyron Smith hasn't been healthy for the last 4 years consistently. So that remains to be seen. My Rams, we spent a lot of money on the interior offensive line, re-signed Kevin Dotson to a 3-year, $48 million contract. Take Jonah Jackson from the Lions, 3 years, $51 million. We now have 1,000 pounds in that middle. We're going to move Steve Avila into that middle. We're going to protect Matthew Stafford. Nobody's going to get up the middle, or that's the plan. And a lot of beef for Kyren Williams. I love where the Rams offense is going to be next year. My problem is where the defense is going to be. As I transition to my closing thought is going to be one of my two favorite Rams of all time. My favorite Ram going up until now was Eric Dickerson, and I liked Marshall Faulk, Kurt Warner as well. But Aaron Donald is my favorite Ram for the sole fact that he's the only one that started and finished his career with the Rams. He won a Super Bowl with the Rams. And I know Ernie may we had this discussion earlier in the year, but I'm gonna say it right now. Aaron Donald is one of the three greatest defensive players ever, with Lawrence Taylor and Reggie White and Aaron Donald. Now, Aaron Donald only played 10 years, but this 10-year period is unmatched in the history of the NFL. So I'm going to read off just a couple of stats, not Caitlin Clark kind stats, not that many, but a number of them. So the approximate value is a stat that shows the value of a particular player. Aaron Donald's average approximate value is 15.3. The next highest guy was Alan Page at 13. And some of the biggest names that you see out there, like a J.J. Watt, is only at 10.9. What this means is that Aaron Donald is almost 20% more valuable than the next highest rated defensive tackle. These are defensive tackles. He's the only one. There's two players in NFL history that's played 10 years and made the Pro Bowl all 10 times. One was Barry Sanders, and the second is Aaron Donald. 10 for 10. He was an all-pro first team 8 times. The only person to do that in a 10-year stretch of times. Actually, he's the only he and Bruce Smith ever were 8 times first team all-pro, and Bruce Smith played 18 seasons to get that 8. Aaron Donald last year had a double team win rate of 18%. The average win rate for a defensive lineman against one person was 18%. So Aaron Donald does double team what the average person does one-on-one. He's just a phenomenal, phenomenal talent. The one time that he did not make first team All-Pro was his rookie year, because very, very infrequently does a rookie make first team All-Pro. He was the defensive rookie of the year his first year. And last year, when the Rams went 5-12 and he just sat out the last 7 games, that's the only time he didn't make first team All-Pro. In 10 years, the only Pro Bowlers on the Rams defense with Aaron Donald in a 10-year period, his rookie year, Robert Quinn was a Pro Bowler on the defensive line. And then in 2020 and 2021, Jalen Ramsey was a Pro Bowler in the secondary. Other than that, Aaron Donald has never played with another high-caliber defensive player. The one time you gave him somebody special, Von Miller, for a handful of games, Super Bowl championship for the Rams, when he was the difference maker in the NFC championship game and in the Super Bowl making the play. If he had people around him, it would be staggering, the statistics that Aaron Donald could have accumulated. But the Rams made the decision. He's so freaking good that he makes everybody on our defense better. We're going to spend all our money on offense and have Aaron Donald carry this defense. And he did, because year after year, Ram after Ram after Ram after Ram leaves for free agency. They get big contracts, and almost to a man, they're all busts. I don't remember one Ram defender that left that ended up being better for the next team, or even the same in the next team. Even Von Miller hasn't been the same since leaving. That's the kind of player Aaron Donald was. He made everyone better, and Bruce Smith had a ton of Hall of Famers on his line. You like Mean Joel Green, there are five Hall of Famers on that defense with him. J.J. Watt had a dominant 3 years. He was a three-time player of the year, but he was only a first-team All-Pro five times because he was hurt so many times. So he didn't have the consistent dominance of that 10-year period. So that is me raving about one Aaron Donald. He could still play at the top of his game, but like I was telling Ernie earlier, he's just sick and tired of the double and triple teams. I mean, that's got to be so mentally frustrating to work so hard and not be able to produce to the level you want because you got two, three guys on you every single time. So I'm worried, Ernie. I'm very worried about what the Rams are going to do now, because now you're going to have to build a defense and not solely rely on one guy to carry it. They're going to have to build the defense with some young parts. Can Byron Young, can Kobe Turner, can they elevate themselves without Aaron Donald there? I'm leery about that. So I think the Rams are going to spend their first four picks in this draft all on defensive linemen. That would be my guess. Or maybe a cornerback, although they brought Darius Williams in. I think they need edge, and they certainly have to replace Aaron Donald in the middle. But congratulations, Aaron Donald. Definitely 2029. Canton, Ohio, oh, yeah. Gold Jacket, first ballot, lock, Hall of Famer. Aaron Donald, thank you for the 10 years in St. Louis and in Los Angeles. Thank you for bringing a world championship to the city of LA. Wish you nothing but the best in your retirement. Maybe you'll come back next year right before the playoffs.
Yeah, that would be so perfect for him. Yeah. Aaron Donald is a beast. University of Pittsburgh guy. The Pittsburgh Steelers really wanted him. They just they had a good team, so they could have picked that high. I think Aaron Donald went in the top 10 that year, correct?
He went 13.
You know, 13 around there. Okay. I know that the Steelers were eyeing on him. Yeah. Terrific. I'm not going to argue any of your points just for the fact that I have so much respect for Aaron Donald himself. In my opinion, he could have separated himself to be clear cut, in that pantheon, what you're saying. I mean, there's always going to be an argument with the all-time greats. I mean, you can look at the Ray Lewis's and who knows, like you said, the former Steelers. You can go back to the Chicago Bears on that great defense. And who's to say that, and you say, oh, they play with five. I think it was more than five Hall of Famers on that defense. I think like two-thirds of that defense is in the Hall of Fame. But they all made each other better,
right?
And everything like that. That's what you push for. In my opinion, Aaron Donald was the type of player that if he stayed played long enough, he could have made that. Because he's definitely not maybe on a down, I wouldn't even say on the downside, because that guy still makes plays. And like you said, if he had help on that defense, there's no telling what he could have done. If he had just played longer, you could make arguments of him actually being up against like the Reggie Whites, in my opinion, and the Bruce Smiths of the world. 10 years, even though it's that stretch, there's going to be questions, in regards to longevity. How many Super Bowls you won, even though Bruce Smith didn't win one. I just wish he played longer. Give the game, don't leave it up, in my opinion. If you want to make a legacy, don't leave it up to people's opinion. Thank you. As a football fan, thank you, Aaron Donald. If that was the last snap that you played, thank you. It was a pleasure watching you. You were like TJ Watt, even though you didn't win the Defensive Player of the Year this year. Aaron Donald made plays when the plays needed to happen. Not like Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett made those plays when you didn't need to happen. And he stole the DPOY this year from TJ Watt, in my opinion. But, yeah, Aaron Donald, no complaints. Terrific player. Wish he was a Pittsburgh Steeler, being that he was from Pittsburgh. Have a great rest of your whatever comes up in your life.
Yeah, apparently it wasn't a surprise. Apparently all season long, the Rams knew that this was going to happen. What was remarkable is they kept it a secret all this time. But I think Aaron Donald is going to be in that Barry Sanders that realm.
Exactly.
That people who left at the top of their game.
Good analogy.
And that's always there's always going to be like, oh, man, I wish they didn't leave when they did, because you think they left so much on the table. But you know what? In today's day and age, you're going to be a Hall of Famer. You have your championship. You have your hundreds of millions of dollars. Keep your brain intact. And I think that's going to happen with more and more players in the trenches. Once they have their money, they're going to get out of the game a little bit quicker than they used to.
Could have been
now that he's married, he has little kids, you start to think a little bit differently. So congratulations, Aaron Donald. You are absolutely the man. And I'll be sleeping in your jersey for the next couple of weeks, crying every night. How pathetic is that for a 28-year-old man? All right, gang, that wraps up a little bit of an extended version because I needed to cry about Aaron Donald. So much to cover with NFL, UH sports, basketball, volleyball, and a ton that's happening in football. Again, Hawaii Sports Radio Network, we're so happy to be a part of them. Check them out weekday mornings, 8 to 9. Wake Up on the Den with Ku'ule and Paul Breck. They carry all of your Clipper basketball, Dallas Cowboy, USC sports, and HPU sports as well. They'll be picking up OIA baseball as that rounds into shape. Again, Hawaii Sports Radio, HISportsRadio.com. You can listen to them there. You can listen to our podcast there as well. And check us out again, social media, Hawaii's Sports Rivals Podcast on IG and Facebook, Sports Rivals Pod on Twitter. And don't forget, do your ESPN bracket challenge. If you don't go to Twitter, you can go to ESPN.com, search under groups, Hawaii's Sports Peeps exclamation point, and turn in your ballot so you can all say that you lost to Monty this year. Anything else, Ernie?
I'm good.
All right, until next week, the Sports Rivals are out.
Thank you for joining us on the Sports Rivals podcast. Check us out on social media at Sports Rivals Podcast on Instagram and at Sports Rivals Pod on Twitter, where you can share topics you'd like to hear.